An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Ta Hui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 14.
Profound clarity. I am giving you the name Chan Zheng, profound clarity. A patriarch said, as long as there is mental discrimination and calculating judgment, all the perceptions of one's own mind are dreams. If mind and consciousness are quiescent and extinct, without a single thought stirring, this is called correct awareness. These days, there's a kind of phony whose own standpoint is not genuine. They just teach people to control their minds and sit quietly, to sit to the point where the breath ceases. I call this lot pitiable. I'm asking you to meditate in just this way, but though I instruct you like this, it's just that there's no other choice. Beginner's disease. Buddhist disciple Chen, you have realized that personal existence is false and that things are illusory. Amidst illusory falsehood, you were able to contemplate the saying, a dog has no Buddha nature. You sent me a letter expressing your understanding. Though in the main your basis is already correct, you are not yet clear about the great Dharma. This is a common disease of beginners entering the path. Old Shakyamuni Buddha said, this way is all right, and not this way is all right too. This way or not this way, it's all right. Just get the root. Don't worry about the branches. Over a long, long time, it will sink in thoroughly. Don't worry that you won't attain oneness. Work on it.
I can see the difficulties Ta Hui is passing through. He can intellectually understand the path of awareness. He can also intellectually explain it to others, but he himself still remains only a philosopher. He has not transformed himself into a mystic. The philosopher talks about truth. The mystic is truth. And there is profound difference between talking about and being it. Certainly the people who have reached to the point of being truth itself also can talk. But their words vibrate on a totally different level. And it can be seen very clearly that they are not coming from the mind. They are coming from an absolute nothingness. They carry something of nothingness with them. You cannot grasp it, but you can feel it. A very subtle fragrance. You cannot see it, but you can smell it. You may not be able to prove it, but as far as yourself, it is absolutely certain. Tawi's problem is that from the very beginning he has taken the standpoint of an intellectual. And if he was just an ordinary intellectual, satisfied with his intellect and its conceptualizations, there was no difficulty. But there is some part of him which does not simply want to live with the borrowed knowledge. A part of him longs to realize and experience and know the mystery first hand. This is his dilemma. And he's continuously moving from one part to another part. As we are going further into his sutras, I feel a hope that his mystical part is winning ground. His intellect is lagging behind. Although it is not defeated yet, the first sutra, I am giving you the name Chanjan, profound clarity. A patriarch said, as long as there is mental discrimination and calculating judgment, all the perceptions of one's own mind are dreams. If mind and consciousness are quiescent and extinct, without a single thought stirring. This is called correct awareness. The first thing, clarity is always profound. There is no other way for clarity to be. Profound clarity does not make sense. It is just like somebody telling you, I love you very, very much. In fact, you cannot love less and you cannot love more. Love does not belong to the world of quantity. Hence, less or more are irrelevant. You can either love or not love. How can you love less? And how can you love more? Still, people go on saying, I love you very much, not seeing a tremendous fallacy that love is a quality and not a quantity. A quality is either present or not present. More or less belong to the world of quantities. The English word matter and the French word meter come from the Sanskrit word matra, and matra means quantity. That which can be measured is matter. Matter simply means measurable. And that which cannot be measured, that which is not within the territory of quantity, is consciousness. His saying that I am giving you the name Chanjan, he must be initiating somebody into sannyas, and giving him the name Chanjan, which means profound clarity. But he does not understand that clarity is always profound. It is never less and never more. Nothing can be added to it and nothing can be taken out of it. This is the problem with intellectual understanding. You seem to understand and still you go on somewhere missing the point. The intellectuals try in every way to be as profound as the mystics, but their profundity is hilarious. I am reminded of an ancient parable. A great archer he was also the king of his country, was going through a village in his golden chariot, and he was amazed to see that on every tree there was an arrow, or many arrows, exactly hitting the bull's eye. A circle was there, and the arrow was exactly in the middle. And not a single fault, and almost on all the trees there were few arrows. He could not believe that in this small village there is such a great archer. He stopped his chariot and he inquired about the archer. And the person he inquired, he started laughing. He said, "He is an idiot. Don't be worried about him." But the king said, "You don't understand. He may be an idiot. I'm not concerned with that. But he is a greater archer than me. That is certain." I would like to see him. A crowd gathered seeing the king, and they all laughed and they said, "It is pointless, he is really a fool." But the king could not understand how an idiot can manage such good sorts, absolute and perfect, impeccable. He said, "Stop laughing and call the man." And a young man was brought to him. He looked stupid, retarded. The king was also puzzled. He asked the young man, "What is your secret?" He said, "What secret?" The king showed him that every arrow is exactly in the middle of a circle. The young man started laughing. He said, "I cannot lie to you. The truth is, first I shoot the arrow, and then I draw the circle." Naturally, 100%. It does not matter where the arrow goes. Wherever it goes, I make the arrow later on. And everybody who passes from this village is struck by the great art . I remain quiet. I never say the truth to anybody, but you are the king and I cannot lie to you. this is really the situation of intellectuals. They are profound archers, but first they hit the arrow and then they draw the bound. Their work appears to those who don't know their way and their strategy as perfect. Now, giving to a disciple the name of profound clarity, he cannot even think that he is doing something wrong. He does not know what clarity is as an experience. Otherwise, he would never have given the name profound clarity. Clarity is enough unto itself. A patriarch said, as long as there is mental discrimination and calculating judgment, all the perceptions of one's own mind are dreams. If mind and consciousness are quiescent and extinct, without a single thought stirring, this is called correct awareness. Whenever he quotes, almost always he is right, but only when it is a quotation. These are not his words. I am coming to his words, and then you will see how the intellectual falls far below to the mystic and his experience. These are his words. These days there is a kind of phony whose own standpoint is not genuine. They just teach people to control their minds and sit quietly, to sit to the point where the breath ceases. I call this lot pitiable. And I am asking you to meditate in just this way, which he calls pitiable. But though I instruct you like this, it is just that there is no other choice. Can you see the stupidity of our intellectual effort to understand that which is beyond? He is teaching the same kind of meditation to people. Then it is right. And when others are teaching the same kind of meditation, it is pitiable. These people are phony. It is so difficult to save him In the first place, if this is the same meditation that he himself is giving to others, on what grounds he is calling others phony who are giving the same meditation? He has not made it clear in any way why they are phony, why they are not genuine. Because their teaching of meditation is the same as his own. And secondly, he says, I have to teach this way because it is just that there is no other choice. That too is absolutely wrong. There are hundreds of methods of meditation. But he has never meditated. But there is always in intellectuals a kind of rivalry, a kind of competition, a kind of jealousy. You must have seen dogs barking at each other for no reason at all. Just they cannot resist the temptation. Once a dog sees another dog, that immediately they both start barking. I have heard a story about a dog. He used to live in Varanasi, the holy place of the Hindus. But everybody was going towards New Delhi. He inquired, what is the matter? Why everybody is going to New Delhi? And he found out that those who are representatives of the people, they are going to Delhi to be members of the parliament. So he collected a great crowd of dogs and he was a very big dog and could bark better than anybody else. And naturally he was chosen the leader. And he informed beforehand the dogs of Delhi that I have been chosen from Varanasi and I am coming. It will take almost 1 month. Because I will be walking from Varanasi to New Delhi. But he reached in 3 days. The dogs of New Delhi were simply amazed. They could not believe that a journey of 1 month, how you managed to do it in 3 days. He said, you don't know our people. The dogs would not let me rest anywhere. These 3 days I have been running non-stop. The dogs from one village will follow me barking, and by the time I have reached into another village, another group of dogs will follow me. There was no time for anything, to rest or to sleep or to eat or to drink. All the way I have been running and running. The dog said, "This is one of our great quality. It is said in our holy scriptures that intellectuals are born as dogs. It is their old habit of barking at each other. Everything they have forgotten, but the barking has been their very soul." Now you can see this man is calling others phony. I don't know what word has been translated as phony. One thing is certain, at the time of Tahui, China had no telephones. Because the word phony comes from telephone. Because the voice on the telephone becomes unreal. It loses a living quality. Hence the word phony. The word is not Chinese, the word is American. And in America everything is phony. What word has been translated as phony? It must have been something like unauthentic, insincere. But to call others unauthentic, insincere, phony, not genuine, without giving any reason, because they are teaching people to control their minds and sit quietly, to sit to the point where the breath ceases, I call this lot pitiable. I am asking you to meditate in just this way. But though I instruct you like this, it is just that there is no other choice. If there is no other choice, then why you are calling those poor people phony? They also don't have any other choice. So first thing, intellectuals have a very egoistic attitude, quarrelsome attitude. always ready to start a battle of words, that is not right for a mystic. Secondly, the method that he calls phony people are teaching is not a right method. But because he himself has never meditated, he does not understand what is right and what is wrong. The method these people are teaching, and he himself is teaching, is to control your mind. Meditation has nothing to do with controlling the mind, because every control is a kind of repression. And that which is repressed will take its revenge. Whenever you will relax a little, the mind that was in control will immediately come up and start with vengeance to stir up everything within you. Meditation is not control, because control creates tension, and meditation is based on relaxation. Meditation has few essential things in it, whatever the method, but those few essentials are necessary in every method. The first is a relaxed state. No fight with the mind, no control of the mind, no concentration, second, just watching with a relaxed awareness, whatever is going on, without any interference. Just watching the mind silently, without any judgment, evaluation, these are the three things. Relaxation, watching, no judgment. And slowly, slowly, a great silence descends over you. All movement within you ceases. You are, but there is no sense of I am. Just a pure space. There are 112 methods of meditation. I have talked on all those methods. They differ in their constitution, but the fundamentals remain the same: relaxation, watchfulness, non-judgmental, attitude. So in the first place, the method is wrong, and he is teaching the same method, and he says, because there is no other choice, he is not aware of a tremendous choice. 112 methods are as ancient as 10,000 years at least. The first man to collect all those methods was Shiva. And his statues have been found in Harappa and Mohenjo-daro. These cities flourished 7,000 years before. They must have been one of the most cultured cities of those days, because their roads are so wide. They have attached bathrooms. They have hot and cold running water in their bathrooms. They have swimming pools as big as Olympic swimming pools. And in their cities, the only thing that we can recognize, which still persists, is the statue of Shiva. The Shivlinga, the phallic symbol of Shiva. That is the only thing that connects us with Harappa and Mohenjo-daro. Because of this, the historians have concluded that Shiva is not an Aryan, because those cities existed before Aryans came into India. But Shiva has in his book Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, 112 methods of meditation. More methods can be created. I have created many more methods. Just the essential ingredients should be there. You can change the device according to the times, according to individuals, but you cannot leave these three things: relaxation, watchfulness, and a non-judgmental attitude. So in fact, just these three things is the only method of meditation. All other are variations of the same theme. So whatever he has been teaching is wrong. The others must have been other intellectuals, other teachers, whom he is calling phony, and he cannot see a simple thing, that how can you call them phony and pitiable if your teaching also is of the same method? And he is not aware that there are many alternatives. He has never meditated. One does not have to know Shiva's Vigyan Bhairav Tantra. If one meditates just with these three essentials, he can create as many methods for different situations, different people, as he likes. But one should have his own experience. And to condemn others who are doing the same thing must be utterly blind. He cannot see what he is saying. Buddhist disciple Chen, you have realized that personal existence is false and that things are illusory. Amidst illusory falsehood, you were able to contemplate the same, a dog has no Buddha nature. You sent me a letter expressing your understanding. Though in the main your basis is already correct, you are not yet clear about the great Dharma. This is a common disease of beginners entering the path. It is an old statement of Linchi and of other Zen masters, and there is a possibility it may be from the times of Gautam Buddha himself. It has been asked down the ages by the disciples, because Buddhism says every living being has a Buddha nature. Every living being can become a Buddha. Naturally, the question arises, does a dog also has Buddha nature? And all the great masters have said yes. And those who have said no don't understand at all. It is something to be pondered over. why a dog should not have a Buddha nature. If every living being has Buddha nature, why dog should be such an exceptional being? Just because in your minds the very word dog is condemned, you cannot think that a dog can have a Buddha nature. My God, then what is the point of having a Buddha nature? Even a dog can have it. It is not worth bothering years of meditation, long pilgrimages, and finally what you attain is just a dog's nature. Naturally, those who don't understand have immediately said no. And Tahui agrees with those people who say no. But in fact, a dog is just a god is spelled wrongly. I, for one, is absolutely ready to say yes, a dog has as much potential to be a Buddha as Gautam Buddha himself. And there is no question why poor dog should be left out when all beings, donkeys and monkeys and even Yankees, all are included. The dog is a poor animal, innocent. There is nothing wrong in the dog. Perhaps he has to travel a long way to become a Buddha. But it is only a question of time. Someday, a dog is also going to become enlightened. In some birth, somewhere in future, and you should understand it clearly, that in the eternity of time, it does not matter whether you become enlightened today or tomorrow or day after tomorrow, in this life or another life. In the eternity of time, it does not matter at all. In the eternity of time, nobody is ahead and nobody is behind. Because there is no beginning in time and there is no end in time. So whenever you become enlightened, you are always contemporary of all the Buddhas. They may have become thousands of years before enlightened. If you become enlightened today, suddenly you will find you are raised into a different scale of time, where you are a contemporary of all the Buddhas, past, present and future. So a man who has tasted awakening will not deny to dogs their intrinsic treasure. They are living beings. Old Shakyamuni Buddha said, "This way is all right, and not this way is all right too. This way or not this way, it is all right. Just get the root, don't worry about the branches. Over a long time, it will sink in thoroughly. Don't worry that you won't attain oneness, work on it." He calls this kind of question, whether a dog has Buddha nature or not, a common disease of beginners entering the path. It is natural human curiosity. But at least somebody has entered the path. Such questions don't mean anything to those who have not entered the path at all. It is not a disease. It is simply a curiosity if all living beings are intrinsically as capable of awakening as human beings. It simply makes existence truly communist. As far as I'm concerned, I think communism is right only when it is concerned with the ultimate nature of beings. Only in that ultimate stage there is equality. Before that, communism is an utopia. And is never going to be fulfilled. Only two Buddhas are equal. But ignorant people cannot be equal. Ignorant people are psychologically unequal. Hence the whole idea of Karl Marx and his followers, that man is equal, is psychologically wrong. No two men are equal. They have all the differences that you can conceive. And to force them into equality, you will have to destroy democracy, you will have to destroy freedom, you will have to destroy freedom of expression, you will have to destroy people's individuality, their dignity of being human beings, their very pride. It is a very strange kind of equality. Everybody is bulldozed and everybody becomes equal. There was one king in Greece who was a little cuckoo. He has made a beautiful golden bed and a special guest house. A great palace. Only few guests ever stayed in his guest house. And never came out living. Because the trouble with the king was that the guest has to fit with the bed. If he was a little long, then his legs or his head to be cut in size. Or if he was a little short, then traction. Then he has to be pulled both the sides. He had four wrestlers practicing traction. But anyway, he was going to be killed. In traction, his head will come out. Because they were pulling his head to bring to the size. His legs may come out. He believed in the holy scriptures of the whole world. They all believe that man is made for them. They are not made for man. His bed was not made for men. Every guest has to fit with the bed. As the rumor reached to other friends, other kings, nobody accepted his invitation. He was continuously inviting guests. Nobody was ready to come because anybody who ever went never came back again. What happened to the guests? In fact, he was practicing a sort of communism, making everybody of equal size. And that's what has happened in Soviet Union in 70 years. Just before 70 years, Soviet Union, before the revolution, was one of the giant countries that have given birth to a great line of geniuses in 70 years they have not been able to create a single genius of the quality of Leo Tolstoy, Maxim Gorky, Anton Chekhov, Fyodor Dostoevsky, Turgenev. Not a single man in 70 years. And all these five men existed before the revolution. Maxim Gorky even remained alive after the revolution for a few years. If you want to choose 10 great names of novelists of the world, whole world, of all languages, these five will be absolutely there. You cannot leave a single of them out of a list of 10. The whole world will have only five places, and five places will be given to the Russians. And still those five from the whole world will not be really comparable to the greatness of the Russian novelists. What happened? After revolution, everybody was cut to size. Mind is no more free. You cannot say anything that is not approved by the government. You cannot write anything that is not approved by the government. There is no freedom of thought. There is no individual expression in anything. Everything has become uniform. People have disappeared. Only a crowd exists. Only numbers, not individuals. When Khrushchev came into power, addressing his first meeting of the Communist Party, he exposed Joseph Stalin that he has killed almost 1 million people after the revolution. Anybody who was trying to be himself and was not willing to become a cog in the wheel was immediately killed. You are not allowed to have any opinion of your own. About everything, you have to depend on the government. And the whole country has become a concentration camp. No democracy. The press, the radio, the television, everything belongs to the government. You cannot get information which the government does not release. Soviet Union lives almost in darkness about the whole world. What is going on in the world, Soviet Union, and it is not a small country, it is 1/6 land of the whole world. Khrushchev addressed the first meeting and exposed that how brutal, murderous Joseph Stalin has been. In the name of communism, he has killed all the genius of the people. He has reduced everybody to equal poverty. Certainly there has come a certain equality. Everybody is equally poor. Everybody is equally suppressed. Everybody is equally enslaved. Everybody is equally trembling with fear. Any moment and death can knock on its door. In Russia, the name of death is KGB. When Khrushchev was telling to the Communist Party, one man from the back said that you have been a colleague of Joseph Stalin his whole life. Why you did not object? There was great silence. For a moment Khrushchev looked at the place from where the voice has come and said, comrade, just please stand up so I can see you better. Nobody stood. He again said that just stand up so I can see who is asking the question. 3 times he asked, nobody stood and nobody asked the question again. He said, now do you understand why I was silent? Why you are silent? Because if you stand up, you are finished. I remained silent because I wanted to be alive. To create equality, all human values have been destroyed. No, as far as man is concerned, man needs freedom to be unequal, equal opportunity to be unequal. Opportunities should be given equally to all, but opportunities to grow in their uniqueness, in their own individuality, in such opportunities to be unequal, equal opportunities only when people become enlightened. when there is nothing but a pure consciousness, then communism is possible. But that day is just an utopia. The word utopia is very beautiful. It means that which never comes. But only in enlightenment there is a possibility of equality and to the enlightened person all beings they may not be enlightened now are going to be enlightened someday. So intrinsically, every being, every living being, the trees are included. Wherever there is life in any form, they are all on the way, moving, evolving, going higher. And the same is the goal, to become awakened, to become absolute purity, consciousness, blissfulness, ecstasy. So it is not a disease to ask such a question. It is absolutely natural curiosity. I am a communist as far as man's intrinsic potential is concerned. And I am not a communist as far as man's actuality is concerned. He should be given every support, opportunity to grow in his own way. A forced equality is destructive. Destructive of all that is valuable. There should be big trees, tall trees reaching to the stars, and there should be small bushes. They both enrich existence. There should be lotuses, and there should be roses. And there should be marigolds. The variety, the difference, the unequality makes life richer, makes life more livable, lovable. Just think, everybody goes through plastic surgery and has the same kind of nose, equal noses, have the same kind of eyes, have the same kind of faces, and it will be so boring that people will start walking with closed eyes. tired of seeing the same noses and same eyes and same faces. It will be the most hellish world possible. It is beautiful that there are long noses and short noses, and they come in all sizes and all shapes. In equality, in humanity, is a psychological truth. Equality is a spiritual truth. One should not get mixed up. A dog has a Buddha nature just as anybody else has. It is not the disease of a beginner entering the path. It is purely a human curiosity. Whether all living beings have the same potential to blossom into that ultimate ecstasy that only very few people, a Gautam Buddha, a Lao Tzu, a Zarathustra, have achieved. I consider it absolutely normal, not a disease. And he quotes Gautam Buddha, which needs some explanation because you will not understand it. And I don't think whether he understands it, because he gives no explanation about it. Old Shakyamuni Buddha said, this way is all right, and not this way is all right too. This way or not this way, it is all right. He does not explain why he is quoting this statement. He is simply throwing names, quotations, which is one of the strategies of intellectuals to show their knowledgeability. But I don't think he understands even the meaning of it, because it is one of the most difficult things to understand. Aristotle is called to be the father of Western logic. His logic is the simplest logic. Black is black, white is white. Yes means yes, no means no. Clear-cut division. It is called twofold logic. Gautam Buddha believed, and I think he has far greater insight than Aristotle, in a threefold logic. And if you can understand his threefold logic, only then this statement will become clear to you. For example, if somebody asks Gautam Buddha, does God exist? According to his threefold logic, he will answer, yes, God exists. No, God does not exist. Yes and no both. God exists, God does not exist. Aristotle's logic is twofold. Either God exists or God does not exist. There is no question of the third possibility, that both may be right. In a certain sense, from a certain angle, it may be said with absolute truthfulness that God exists. For example, that existence is intelligent, that existence is not material, that existence is basically made of consciousness. Even matter is only a form of sleeping consciousness, consciousness in coma. If you can mean by God universal consciousness, he exists. But you may mean by God as a person who created the world, then God does not exist. But it is possible to conceive God as consciousness and also as not a creator, but the very creativity of existence. It all depends on us what we mean by God. Because God is only a hypothesis, a word. The meaning has to be given by us. If God is not a creator and a person, but the very phenomenon of creativity and consciousness, then both are right. God exists and God does not exist. This was the threefold logic. And Gautam Buddha is going to have the future world to be conquered by the threefold logic. Aristotle is already out of date. But Gautam Buddha's contemporary Mahavira has a sevenfold logic. and he is going to be the ultimate winner as far as logic is concerned, because he has gone to the all possible alternatives. Three are not all positive, all possible alternatives. For example, Mahavira's fourth alternative is perhaps God exists and is indefinable. He brings indefinability as the fourth alternative. And the fifth, perhaps God is not and is still undefinable. And as the sixth, perhaps God is not and is indefinable. And the seventh, perhaps nothing can be said, only that it is indefinable. He has covered all the possibilities and interpretations. Even Gautam Buddha avoided to go that far away. He remained within comprehensible limits. Now you see his statement, you can understand it. Old Shakyamuni Buddha said, this way is all right, and not this way is all right too. This way or not this way, it is all right. Three statements. It makes experience more mysterious. Aristotle demystifies existence. Just dividing it into life and death, into day and night, into right and wrong, into good and bad, into God and devil. A little childish, a little retarded. Life is more complex than that. He is only taking the two extremes and he is forgetting the middle point. And Buddha has called his way the middle way. So he has to take in account the exact middle point, where the opposites meet, where contradictions dissolve into each other and become complementaries. Then it becomes a threefold logic, two extremes and one where extremes merge and melt into oneness. His approach is not only more mystical, it is more scientific too. Modern physics is coming closer to Gautam Buddha and abandoning completely Aristotle. And with Aristotle is abandoned the Euclidean geometry, because that was a byproduct of Aristotelian logic. So Aristotle and Euclid have reigned for 2000 years in the West. But modern physics finds that things are more complicated than Aristotle and Euclid have thought. Gautam Buddha perhaps is closer to reality because he is taking a more mysterious approach . He is broadening our perception of reality. My own feeling is that ultimately modern physics will have to accept not only Gautam Buddha, but Mahavira. Because his sevenfold logic is absolutely complete. You cannot add anything more. There cannot be eightfold logic. Seven are all the possibilities have been covered. Nothing has been left out. Everything has been taken in. It is all inclusive. And Mahavira has been accepted without even known that they are accepting a certain man who lived 25 centuries before, a contemporary of Gautam Buddha. Because he preached theory of relativity. He was the first man to preach theory of relativity. Albert Einstein would have been immensely happy if somebody has introduced him about Mahavira's theory of relativity. Although it is not about physics, it is about human consciousness, but it is the same standpoint. And Albert Einstein would have danced if he had heard the sevenfold logic of Mahavira. Because he was finding too much difficulty with Aristotle. Reality was bigger and the logic was smaller, and it was not able to help in any way in further research, going deeper into matter and energy. It was good for day to work in the marketplace, but it was not good enough for deeper realms. But I think Tahui has not got any idea why he has quoted this statement, just perhaps to mystify people, just to pretend that he understands this strange logic of threefoldness, because he does not say anything about it. It is out of context. Anything said must have some meaning, some relationship. Neither it is related with the previous sutra, nor it is related by the succeeding sutra. He has just inserted it. My feeling is he simply wants to mystify people that he knows great things that they cannot understand. It is one of significant things to understand about man, that whatever he cannot understand, he thinks must be right. Because of this, philosophers have been writing in such a way that you will go on reading big phrases, long sentences, big paragraphs, so big that by the time you come to the end of the paragraph, you have forgotten the beginning. For example, the German philosopher Hegel is the master in mystifying absolutely nonsense things. And his whole strategy is just to write big words, pompous, bombastic, his single sentence will run all over the page. And by the time you have come to the end of the sentence, you don't have any idea what was the beginning, what was in the middle. And he was thought a great philosopher till he was understood. When he was understood, he was put aside that he is just tricky fellow. He is just trying to mystify people, and he had succeeded, at least in his life. He enjoyed the idea of being a great philosopher. Only after his death, slowly, scholars looked into it and found that he says nothing and says so much. And if you condense it, your hands are empty. There is nothing in it. Whenever I have thought about Hegel, I have always remembered a man in my village. He was almost a nutcase. He has crammed the whole Oxford Dictionary. And he used to write letters to the President, to the Prime Minister, to the Governor. And he was living just nearby my house. Once in a while, he used to come to me to show his letters, 20 pages, 30 pages, 50 pages, foolscap letters typed, and not a single sentence making any sense, because he knew nothing about language. He knew everything about the dictionary. That was the trouble. He will simply go on writing big words. It made no sense at all. And he was torturing me. So I said, you do one thing. I don't have much time. And your letters are too long. And it will be helpful also, because this big letter the president is not going to read. So with the letter, you should write a small summary. Just 10 lines, 12 lines at the most. He said, that's a good idea. I will write the summary, that's not a problem. So he went and he left the letter with me to write the summary. I was surprised that this is something strange. How he is going to write the summary? But there was no problem for him. The dictionary was with him. So another 10 lines of absolute absurdity. I said, this is perfectly good. This explains everything. And I can say to you that this much the president is going to read. 20 pages is too much. You write such great philosophy. But nobody was answering his letters. And he will come to me that now 1 month has passed and no answer, not even a receipt that they have received my letter, and I have been working so hard. I said to him that I don't think these politicians have intelligence enough to understand your great philosophy. He said, that is right. You are the only man who understands me. Nobody seems to understand. Every day he was going to the collectorate with a new letter. And the collector was tired. One day he met me in the library and he said, can't you stop this man? Although I never read it, but even to keep it on the table is a torture. One feels inside one's stomach some disturbance. Just to read 2-3 lines is enough to drive anybody crazy. I said, it is very difficult to stop him, because I am the only man who understands him. If you have any difficulty, I can tell him, he can explain. He said, I want you not to mention to him at all, he will come with a bigger explanation. And once in a while I used to go to my town, and he used to wait for me. I loved the man. He was crazy, but very nice and very sweet. And absolutely harmless. I told him that you have done only one thing wrong. He said, what? I said, you should have been born in Germany. And you would have been known in the history as a great philosopher. Because I have studied all those great German philosophers. They are all nutcases. One man who was thought to be one of the greatest German philosophers of this century, Martin Heidegger, he started many books, but he never completed any book. Because by the time he was half the way, he has forgotten what he has written. So the first volume will be published. And people will be waiting for the second volume. It never came. And this went on happening his whole life. He never completed any book. And when asked, he said, the reality is, I myself forget what I have been writing. It is so complicated that it is better to start a new book rather than to read the old one. Let others read. I don't want to get involved into it. And it will be a great entertainment to you if you read something of Martin Heidegger. And this shows his great intelligence, that he was a follower of Adolf Hitler. Who was certainly a madman. And the greatest philosopher follows an idiot . It does not show anything about Adolf Hitler, but it shows something about Martin Heidegger. And I have gone through his all the works. In the end, your hands are empty. You don't get anything what he wants to say, why he wants to say. Why all this long process of gymnastics without any conclusion? But these people have been impressing the common masses. My understanding is that whatever people cannot understand, they think it must be great. Because we cannot understand, naturally, it has to be something very miraculous, very mysterious. But the truth is always simple. It is mysterious because it is simple. The truth is always obvious. It is miraculous because it is obvious, not because it is complex, not because it is far away. It is so close that you tend to forget it. It is within you, so you don't even bother to look at it. Truth is simple, obvious, uncomplicated. All that it needs, just a silent awareness. And a great understanding descends on you. And the understanding that does not become knowledge. An understanding that deepens your innocence and that deepens the mystery of life.